he doesn't understand that to do a particular thing, a particular qualification is required. All of us, we start as karmis. A karmi is one who is who thinks that he's the one that is doing all the actions, and he also wants to enjoy the results. And because he considers himself to be the doer and the enjoyer, he is getting more and more bound in the cycle of birth and death by creating more and more vasanas for him. Due to his meritorious deeds of the past, it is said that such a person will then meet a guru, a spiritual guru, who will initiate him into karma yoga. Yoga to join, yuj to join with the higher. Yes, you have to do karma, and yes, you have the push of vasanas to do karma. We are not asking you to change any of the karmas that you're doing externally, but what we are asking you to change is your mental attitude. So when you do the same action that you were doing before, nothing special, you know, nothing like that. Same, your same household duties, your same office duties, etc. Do them with a sense of surrender, a sense of detachment, a sense of duty, and then accept the results as prasad. We know prasad is, when we get prasad at the temple, we don't say, oh, I don't like this prasad, or I like this very much. We just accept it. So when this person, a karmi, remember, is always qualified to do karma yoga. Whoever is doing action, anybody who is rajasic, has the qualification, because he has that rajas in the mind, and all he has to do is change the attitude. So there is not like a special qualification that is required. Only qualification is, are you working or are you totally tamasic? If you're totally tamasic and you're not doing anything, then the qualification would be that you start working at least for your selfish motives. That would be the qualification then. But a karmi, when you're starting at the level of karma, so you are already doing work. So then you are qualified to change your mental attitude, your mental inclinations. So this person then starts doing karma yoga, and then what happens is he gets purified enough to become, his mind becomes qualified to see that non-doer substratum. That's there is a qualification required. The qualification is sufficient purity of mind. Okay, so from karmi to karma yoga, actually there's no purity at all. But doing karma yoga for a number of years, number of time, for a length of time, the person will gain a certain qualification, which is a certain amount of purity of mind, which will allow him to recognize that substratum, which we talked about in chapter 4, verse 18. He will then be able to recognize that there is some non-doer within me somewhere, and all these actions that are happening are because of the play of the gunas, are because of prakriti. I am not actually propelling them. The vasanas are the one that are propelling them. I have nothing to do with the vasanas. I am above the vasanas, etc., etc. So this purification will give him that qualification. Once he gets that qualification to see that substratum, then next, more purification required, where he will identify with that substratum and he will come to know completely that I am the non-doer. So that, those are the stages. In chapter 5, when Bhagwan starts, in chapter 4, Bhagwan told Arjun to do karma yoga. Not karma, he says do karma yoga. And this, in chapter 5, he calls it at karma sannyas. Karma sannyas means knowing that I am the non-doer. Sannyas doesn't mean renouncing the work externally. So that qualification Arjun doesn't have. And so Arjun is confused, and therefore he starts saying that if you're glorifying karma sannyas, obviously karma sannyas is a little bit higher than karma yoga. Karma yoga is higher than karma. Karma is definitely higher than tamas, non-activity at all. Then why I should do karma yoga? But he's forgetting that you should do karma yoga because you need a certain purity, a certain amount of purity of mind to understand that there is a non-doer, and then more purity to identify with the non-doer. You understand? See, there is one thing. We have our famous snake and rope example. Okay. So the ignorant person who is there, he will see the rope and he will think it is snake and he's afraid. Okay. So he just considers the snake to be real. He's afraid. He has his fears, etc., etc. Now the karma yogi is trying to see the rope. He's being told by his guru that really, really there is no snake. Please make an effort to see the rope. Okay. Then the next step, which is chapter 4, seeing the substratum, the person is seeing the snake, but he says, no, I know that there is no snake. There is a rope. Understand, this is very subtle progression. Okay, so he says, oh, yeah. It feels like a snake, but I know, no, there is no snake, there is a rope. The next step, chapter 5, he says, there is no snake, period. It is not that there is a snake, but it is false. The next step is there is no snake. There is only rope. Okay? This is the progression. Please understand this. This is the whole thing. That is why it is 3, 4 and 5. Karma yoga, karma, jnana, karma sannyasa and then karma sannyasa. Karma sannyasa means there is no snake, period. I am not doing anything. And that is why we saw those verses where 8 and 9 where he says, I don't see, I don't hear, I don't taste, I don't touch, I don't... That is complete identification with the substratum. So when he says, I don't see, he's talking from the highest standpoint. That I is a capital I, like Gurudev would say. When I say I see, mine is a small I. It is my ego. It is my ahankar which is saying that I see. I think I am the one that is seeing. I am the one that is writing. I am the one that is speaking, etc., etc., etc. Okay? So this is where we are, and we completed till verse 11 last time. And then Bhagwan has said in verse 10 that the one who does actions knowing fully well that he's not the doer, that karma can never bind him. Like the lotus leaf. That's the example given in verse 10. Lipyate nasa papena. This lipyate, this clinging. Lipyate is clinging or applying. That doership, he doesn't have the doership. So any result that is coming out of the karma that is coming out of him does not bind him at all in any way. Just like the water does not touch the lotus leaf in any way. Okay, and I told you the lotus coming out of this dirt, still it is untouched by the dirt. And that is how we have to try and live. Is living in the dirt, we need to remain untouched. But there is no way that we can just get out of the dirt and live. The lotus cannot live out of the water. The lotus has to live inside the water. We also have to live inside this world. We have to live in the samsara, but not as a samsari. A samsari is one who is getting attached all the time to his actions, his results, that. So live in the samsara, but not as a samsari. That is the message. And this is how the progression is. Then in 11, we saw kayena manasa buddhya kevalena. So all the actions, yogis, they have abandoned attachment. Attachment to what? To the action itself as well as to the result, everything. They perform actions by the body for the purification of the self. Now we'll see verse 12 and we'll go into detail about this karma, how they perform. So verse 12. Yukta karma phalam tyaktva shanti mapnoti naishtikim ayukta kama karena phale sakto nibadhyate. The united one, the well poised or the harmonized, having abandoned the fruit of action, attains of eternal peace. The non-united, the unsteady or the unbalanced, impelled by desire and attached to the fruit, is bound. So yukta and ayukta, two words are used. Yukta again coming from the same root, yuj, to join. So harmonize. Therefore Gurudev has used the word harmonized. Where is the harmony? The harmony is between the body, mind and intellect. Body, speech, mind and intellect. So there is just that honesty about all his actions and deeds. He's at peace. Harmony brings peace. See, when the notes are being played on a musical instrument, if they're played properly, then there's harmony. There's some one note extra or less, then there's disharmony. Then the one who can really understand music, understand. Yesterday I was at a music ghazal show, and that this violin guy one note he played extra. Of course, we didn't understand, but we had a friend who is a, she's a singer as well. And immediately the singer, you know, he told that violinist, don't do that. I didn't understand, very honestly speaking. But he recognized that that harmony had been disturbed because one note had been played extra. So harmony is when everything is going smoothly. So there is this unity between what is being thought, what is being said, what is being done. Okay. And such a person is renouncing this karma phala. See, karmas are of, Shastra says karmas are of four kinds. Okay. One karma, which are the good karmas. First, we have seen in chapter 3, the five types of karmas. Nitya karma, Naimittika karma, Nishidha karma, Prayashchit karma, and then Nitya Naimittika Kamya, and then Prayashchita, Nitya Naimittika Kamya, Nishidha, and Prayashchita. These are the five types of karmas that we have seen. But each these karmas give different kinds of results. So this karma, nitya and naimittika karma, when we are, which are our ordained duties. Okay, nitya and naimittika are the ordained duties for us by the shastras, not ordained by myself. I want to do this, not like that. So whatever is our duty in life as per varna and ashrama, whatever position of life we are in, when we do these actions, they generate what is known as punya, a merit, okay? And this punya then generates birth into higher lokas, into higher worlds, heaven, devloka, gandharva, kinnara, all this, okay, up to brahma loka. Then this nishidha karma, which has been mentioned, which is nishidha means not to do not do this, do's and don'ts, it's a don't. When we do this karma, which we are not supposed to do, it generates what is known as papa, and this papa generates a birth in a lower yoni. Lower means lower than ours. So animal is lower, bird is lower, reptile, insect, mosquito, plant, stone. So these are all these lower yonis. They will generate. Then there is third kind, which is mixed. So there is papa and punya both mixed. How papa and punya both can be mixed in one action? Either it is a good action or it is a bad action. So mixed is when the action may be bad, but the intention is good. When a soldier kills on a battlefield, okay? Arjuna killing all the Kauravas. So killing is a bad action. When you look at killing, oh, kill my grandfather, oh, kill. It's a bad action. But what is the intention behind it? Is it for his personal gain? No, it is for establishing dharma. So it becomes a mixed. There is bad action, but good intention. Vice versa can happen also. There might be bad intention, but action might look very good. So that also is there. Those are known as mixed results. Okay. Now these mixed results, when this papa and punya is mixed, that's when you get the human birth. So there is, they say, Shastra says, that it's 50% of papa and 50% of punya when it's done, 50-50, there is human birth. So lot of punya, higher birth. Lot of papa, lower birth. Mixed, 50-50, human birth. Now this human birth is the best. It is better even than, of course, the lower yoni, definitely not good. Why do we call them lower yonis? They call lower yonis because they are sort of unable to protect themselves. So if I go and take a fruit from the tree is incapable of telling me, why are you touching my fruit? Or if I go cut it, the tree is not going to say anything. And lower yonis, mosquitoes and all, we just kill them. They cannot even protect themselves. Okay? Even the animals, there is a little hierarchy. The tiger and lion might try to run and protect themselves, but still we can kill them. But in human birth, we have, okay, the higher loka is what? All enjoyment, enjoyment, enjoyment. Okay. So higher birth, we might think is good and all that, but higher birth is also impermanent. It is a loka. Any loka, when we say, it is impermanent. The whole idea of study of this Vedanta and study of Bhagavad Gita is to not have a birth at all. Okay, that is what is not getting bound. Even if I do lot of punya, I'm getting bound to higher worlds. If I do papa, I'm getting bound to lower worlds. If there is a miksha, I'm getting bound to this world itself. Among these three, this world is the best, the mortal world. Why? Because in human birth, I experience sorrow and I experience joy. Why? Because I've done 50% punya and 50% papa. So everybody in this world, at some point of their life, they will have some joy. They cannot say my whole life is sorrowful, was sorrowful like that. Nobody can say I've never experienced sorrow only. I don't know what sorrow is. No, I have not met anybody like that. Because it's 50-50 for all of us. So some sort of good people will get, some sort of bad they will get. But this sorrow, like we saw in chapter 1, when sorrow came to Arjun, why? Because he thought he has to kill his grandfather, etc. It became a yoga. Why? Because he turned to the Lord. So for us also, when sorrow comes, it can become a gateway to surrender to the Lord. It can. Not that people go into drugs and drinks and alternative methods. But it can. Sorrow is capable of giving us enough vairagya to go seek spiritual enlightenment. That's what happened to Siddhartha, Prince Siddhartha, right? He saw death and suddenly he said, what is this? He left the world and went. So that window of that choice is there in human birth. That is why this human birth is said to be the most superior. That is why Bhagwan Shankaracharya says it's very rare. So if you have gotten it already, don't waste it. Because there is no guarantee that next birth you will have human birth. You will have this chance. Now, sorrow can lead you to this thing. That's why it became a Vishada yoga. So for us also, Vishada, sorrow, dejection, depression, etc. can become a yoga if we start turning to the Lord, start turning to a spiritual master. Now in joy, what happens in joy? Joy also will can give us that enough peace of mind that we say, I have experience, I have a peace of mind. Let me do some spiritual study. See, in both things, people in sorrow, either they go into something very incorrect. In joy, they get very egoistic. I've got everything. What do I need? They have that feeling. But we can. We have a chance. We have a choice. So if we have done in this punya also, there are different types of punyas. Different types of punyas which will give different types of results. So there could be a punya which will give you material prosperity. Okay? And there could be a punya which would bring you in contact with a spiritual master. So there is this hierarchy in punya also. Punyas are of different kinds. So it may give you punya that, okay, you have a lot of family around you and you're already surrounded by. It can give you the punya that you are only an only child and you are alone, and then that punya can lead you into a spirituality. So we don't know what we have done. Okay, but understand that here we have a choice. Now we have a choice. So this yukta karma phala tyakta. Okay, then the fourth kind is this yukta karma phala tyakta, where this yogin, who is a spiritual practitioner, he is doing actions in such a way he realizes that higher loka also is bondage. Why? Because it is temporary. After my merits are over, I'll have to come back to this. Lower worlds, so I don't want. Who will say, yeah, I want to become a mosquito in my next life? No. So lower worlds, so I don't want only. But this mixed also I don't want. Because again, same thing. Same striving will be there. So in this life, if I have got a chance, let me do karma in such a way, renouncing all attachment. So there is no attachment to results. There is only a thought that I want to purify my mind. This is the kind of person that Bhagwan is talking here in the first line. Yukta, the one who is completely integrated, one who has met a spiritual master, one who has come to know that any other attitude while doing karma, and I have no choice in doing karma, I don't have a choice. So if I think, oh, I should do good action and good action and good action, good. Okay, then still I'm getting bound. okay, he will generally spiritual, like normal people don't go on doing bad actions. So, but mixed is giving this human birth. So I will do the fourth kind, which is neither papa nor punya. It is, I'm not hankering only after any external result. I am only looking for purification of my mind. And purity of mind is shantim aapnoti naishthikim. Shanti, this peace, purity, a pure mind is a peaceful mind. It will not race into thoughts. It will not get agitated. It will not have the push of, you know, that push from within when you feel, I have to do this, I have to say, and then you go say something and then, oh God, why did I even bother saying this? That push from within reduces. In a pure mind, it will be very, very thin. There will be no push. Even if there is a push, there will be an immediate, right? There also there is steps. First, there is a push. There is no recognition. We just get from it. Ah, yeah, let me go say this. Let me go do this. What should I do next? What should I do? Like a whole to-do list. If they have to sit quietly for 5 minutes, they can't. They have to go here. What is the program for tomorrow? Every day. What is plan of act? POA. Somebody came. What's POA? Plan of action for tomorrow. So every minute there is a plan of action. Next minute. So there's no shanti there. Okay? And that is the push. And it is not even being recognized that this push is there. They're saying, oh, I'm like, this is how it is. Then the next step is where the push is being recognized. The spiritual seeker now is being on the path. He's saying, oh, the push. Okay, this push towards this much action is not correct. He's now recognizing it. So what he's saying, even when the push comes, he's saying, some of the pushes, let me just withdraw from them. So he's, you know, and this way, this push is becoming less and less and less. So there is a recognition of the push and a stopping of it. First, there is no right. There is a push and there is going. Just go. Next is recognition of the push and some push. Yes. That's why I always say when I talk, I say, please, if you have a push to donate to the mission, please don't stop it. Because they say, you said stop all push. We had a push, but now we don't want to give. No. So some push, recognize. Yes. It is telling me to do some good work. It is telling me to do charity. Let me do it. But some, no. Two people are, no, I have not been asked to give an opinion. I shouldn't talk. So some pushes, these pushes, when we recognize, we act on some, we don't act on some. We have the control. Then the push itself reduces. Next step, push itself reduces. And finally, it is not there. When the mind gets extremely purified, the push is not there because the person has nothing external in mind, desire, external result in mind. So he just go and he knows actions will happen and results, if they have, it is the law of karma, result will come. Why should I worry about it? So when he stops worrying about it, this is what happens. Yukta karma phale tyaktva. When he renounces, what is renouncing? Renouncing is not like if I win a lottery, I'll renounce. Oh, I don't want to take the. No. Take it. Give it to the mission if you don't want it. Take it. But in your mind, you have not hankered after it. You don't think that your happiness is now dependent on that result. You happen to be in a lottery store. You thought, oh, let me just buy a ticket. You picked up a ticket. Okay. You know that even that ticket got picked up because I'm not doing it. I just had this thought. I picked it up. Now I won it. Not like, you know, I should win. Then I'm upset. Oh, I didn't win. Not like that. So this renunciation, when it comes in the mind, not externally, in the mind, when that renounce, shanti maapnuti naishtikim, then he becomes very firm in that nishtha. Naishtikim word coming from nishtha. Nishtha is abidance. He becomes firmly abided. He firmly abides in that shanti. Shanti is my nature. Please understand that peace is my original nature. My original nature is not all this, you know, here running, there running, agitation. And that is not my nature. That is an acquired nature that we have. We have acquired over births and births create, because we have collected more and more and more vasanas. And so these vasanas have to be reduced. They have to be thinned out so that they're, of course, when they are thin, then the push is not that forceful. And when the push is not that forceful, it will give peace of mind. We need the peace of mind for this knowledge to arise, because in that peace only will you be able to recognize that substratum which was being talked about in chapter 4. And in as the peace increases, there will be more and more identification with the substratum. Why? Because the mind is not now running out constantly. Why? Because there is no, I know this results. Alright? Understand. Now, ayukta kama karena, karena cause, kama desire. This ayukta, who is not harmonized, who has not met a teacher, who has not, or sometimes met a teacher also, but not understood the importance of it, whatever, for whatever reason, he's ayukta, opposite of yukta. Phale sakto nibadhyate. He is now constantly in the thought, what will I get? What will I get? What will I get? And that I is there. So when the thought is there, what will I get? Then that I also is the doer. When you have attachment to the result, then you are thinking you are the one. So he has not even understood, forget recognizing, forget identifying with the substratum. He probably has not even seen the substratum. Okay. Or if he has heard about it, he doesn't have faith, he doesn't have, for whatever reason. That's why we tell so many, Swamiji's tell us, but not everybody is, you know, this thing. So this kama karena, desire, because of desire to what? To the results. He's getting bound. And what happens is, when he gets bound and he goes on doing more and more and more and more actions, then we don't know what kind of birth he will get. Because when that desire for result is strong, then sometimes what happens is the person even does wrong things to get that result. And he doesn't even recognize that he's doing wrong. Okay? So that's why this recognition that I'm the non-doer, and not to do wrong things is by understanding what the Shastra prescribes for us. So if we stick to our own duty, we will never do anything wrong. Okay? So this is what Bhagavan is trying to say here. The mind has to get more and more and more detached. As it gets more and more purified, it will be able to observe its thoughts. It will be able to, like I said, observe the push of the vasanas. And at that time, it will be able to control itself. A pure mind is also a strong mind. So to control our thoughts, whatever that I want to do or I want to say, and if I have to control that, it needs a lot of strength. Control needs more strength. Silence needs more strength than speaking. So control has got a lot of this thing. Okay? And what happens also is when you start seeing that substratum, which is the non-doer, like I told you, the world also does not appear as real. See, the very fact that we are doing any kind of action is because we are giving a lot of reality to the world. Okay? It's very difficult not to, very honestly speaking, because we see it, we can touch it, taste it, smell it, right? And 90% of the people around us are thinking it is all real. So the hurts, the joys, the sorrows, the little things. That's why we have the book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. So much reality is given to these little things that the big things don't even like come, you know, the real things which really matter, they cannot come only to our mind. Because every little thing, the mind is, you know, this soap is small, leave it, let go. So this letting go when it comes, na, when we start seeing non-doer substratum more and more, then that reality to the world, once it starts decreasing, then we will not engage in action that much. Okay? Engage in action, please. Engage in action with intention of result. With desire for result. Okay, please understand. Engagement in action cannot be avoided. It has to be done. Physically action can never, again, once again, physical action can never be avoided. What we are talking of is mental detachment. Okay, and detachment here, Bhagavan talks from the result. The one who is attached to the karma itself can never detach from the result. Never. Never. If he thinks he is the doer, impossible for him to detach from the results. Okay. So this considering myself to be the non-doer, knowing that actions happen, I am not doing anything, is extremely important. And that is what will then help you renounce the results. Then, now Bhagavan is talking about the person who sees the Supreme Being. Here, Supreme Being, the substratum. In this chapter, Supreme Being means that substratum. When we go into chapter 12 and we do Bhakta Lakshana, then it will be seeing the Supreme Being, will be seeing that idol as the Supreme Being. This is Vedanta. This is Jnana. So we are only talking about the substratum here. Okay. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukham vashi navadvare pure dehi naiva kurvat karayan. Mentally renouncing all actions. Again, once again, mentally renouncing. And fully self-controlled, the embodied one rests happily in the nine-gated city, neither acting nor causing others, body and the senses, to act. Okay, so this is a description of the realized master, the one who has realized in this chapter the substratum. Okay, we also sometimes use words who has realized the self, who has got the knowledge. Here, what knowledge does he have? That the substratum is the non-doer and action, because this is all action. This is all meant for householders. That's why these chapters are very important for us. Because how, as householders, we do a lot of actions. And then we think, oh, as householder, I have to become a sannyasi to get this knowledge. No, you being in the house, you can be a sannyasi. How? By recognizing the substratum. Sannyasi is not just wearing yellow and orange clothes and all that. You recognize yourself to be the substratum. You recognize yourself to be the non-doer. You are a sannyasi. It is a mental attitude. It is nothing external. So here he says, sarva karmani manasa sannyasyaste. So in the mind, I've talked about this many times, physically no action has been given up, but in the mind, there is no desire for result. There is no attachment also. Before karma is done, attachment is there to the karma. After karma is done, there is attachment to the result. What will I get? What will I get? Both these attachments have now been renounced. And Sukham, happily he's staying in the nine gated. Here, this Navadware, Bhagavad Gita says Navadware, Kathopanishad says 11 gates. Some texts you will see, some masters will say seven gates. All of them are correct. When they mention seven, they are only referring to the seven apertures in the face. So two eyes, two nostrils, one mouth and two ears. So these are the seven apertures in the mouth. So for in the face. So that is correct. So because they are only referring to these. Here Navadware, Bhagavan Shri Krishna is including the anus and the genitals. So he's made it nine. Kathopanishad will say 11, where they will include the navel and the Brahmarandra. There is a soft spot on the baby when the baby is born, if you, all of you probably know. And that's why this is, you know, in Marathi, those who know Marathi, Talu, this is the Brahmarandra. And it is said that the pranas can leave the body from any one of these 11 apertures at the time of death. And if they leave from the lower apertures, then the birth is lower for that jiva. Because if pranas, when we say pranas are leaving, the jiva is leaving. So when the jiva is leaving from the lower part of the body, he will go into lower yonis. When the jiva is going from the higher parts of the body, then it is higher births, or it is the same birth, same means in the mortal world. And when for a realized master, the pranas always leave from the top, from the Brahmarandra. That's why in chapter 8, when we study, it will come. Bhagavan says that the yogi who has practiced this spirituality throughout his life, etc., etc., then at the time of death, he will raise his pranas to come here and release them from here. And that is how samadhi is taken. That is how Santa Nyaneshwar, Bhagavan Shankaracharya and all, when they said they went into samadhi, that's what they did. What they did was they went into this yoga and raised their pranas to here, to the, this is another one chakra. And then this to the top of the head and release them from here. So if the pranas release from here, there is no rebirth, it is said. Okay, so here Bhagwan is saying Navadware, so that is also correct. 7 apertures in the face and 2 in the lower part of the body. This Dehi, the embodied one, lives in this gate of 9 cities. Just as, you know, it's a comparison to a city. Pura is city. So the city has a king and has the citizens. So here, the citizens are the senses. Okay, and the mind is the king. Mind, intellect is the king, or the jiva is the king, you can say. And so this Dehi, the embodied one, the one who is living inside of this body, who actually has got nothing to do with the body, mind and intellect. The notion that I am the body, that notion is jiva bhava. Please understand. When we say jiva or we say jiva bhava, what is the jiva? There is actually nothing like jiva. It is just a notion which makes us feel that I am this body, and that is why I consider myself a female, 5'4", mother, acharya, president, etc., whatever, happy, sad, sentimental. I'm a very sentimental person. I'm a very compassionate person. I'm a very intelligent person. I'm dull. I don't understand things. All this is falling under that jiva bhava. It is the dehi, the embodied one. Now, in the ignorant person, the one who is ignorant of the spiritual knowledge, he goes on thinking that all this is him, body, mind, intellect. But this verse 13 is not talking about an ignorant person. It is talking about a person who has realized, who has identified with that substratum. So he's no longer a jiva. Already, by living only, he is no longer a jiva. He has identified with the substratum. He knows that he is not doing anything. So Aram say, very happily he is living in this city, because he knows that this city, this body is going to continue till Prarabdha is there. I don't have to worry about the body. If the body, Prarabdha is to get food, it will get food. If it is Prarabdha to get sickness, it will get sickness. What is it to be? That is the attitude of this person here, 13. Okay, what is my, I better cook for tomorrow. Where will my food come? I don't want disease. I don't want anything. That is why, because I think I'm the body. So I worry, where will the body sustenance come from? I worry that the body should not this thing, because I'm thinking I'm the body. Whereas this person, he knows he's not the body. He knows that whatever is of the prarabdha of the body, it will come. Swami Tapon Maharaj, there are quite a few anecdotes, stories. One is when he had malaria. And his body was totally shivering and everything. And for 44 days, he didn't go to the doctor. He was constantly shivering. And he had the firm conviction that this is prarabdha of the body. And if the body is going to live, if the prarabdha of that body is to live, it will live. Why do I need a doctor? We shouldn't do this, huh? Please. We shouldn't do this. Because there was complete identification. That was this. Navadware Pure Dehi, he was. He was living in this city of which I'm living in this city. I've got nothing to do with this city. This city, if it is going to live, this body, if it is going to live, it will live. This body, if it is going to get better, it will get better. Why do I need medication? Why do I have to take medication? 44 days he suffered malaria. So you know malaria. You get the shivers, you get the chills, and then there's certain temperature, then back again to the shivers, cold and up and heat and cold, and that is one example. Second is when he was ill at the very end, and Gurudev went and told him, Gurudev, I have devotees, I'll take you to Delhi, they'll admit you to a hospital. And he said, what do you think, the body is not going to, bodies don't die in Delhi, that you're going to take me to Delhi? No, this is the description of this person. And food, he would just wander. It is said that one day one thief came to him and he said, do you have anything to give me? You know, in the Himalayas also there are robbers, it seems. I don't know, I've never been. So, because he used to wander by himself, he said, I have only this shirt. If you want to take the shirt, then that thief only felt sorry for him. He said, have you eaten? He says, no. Okay, then I will give you half my roti, he said. And he only shared his food with Swami. So, the thing is, okay, if the body is going to get food, it will get. Why should I be worried? Okay, that's why. And okay, students came to him. Okay, fine. You want to learn? I will tell you. Nothing. No, I should have students. Who is a good student? You're not a good student. No, you want this body to speak now. You want it to speak. Because speaking only of scriptural knowledge, not any other thing. Okay, then the body will speak. Fine. I will identify with the body, with the instrument for that much time. And I will speak because I need the body to just speak this thing. So I'll identify. But I've got nothing to do with the body. And this is why, na eva kurvan karyan. I myself, I don't do anything. And I also don't make the body do anything. The body is doing things because of the interaction of the gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas. There is sattva knowledge in the mind. The rajas is the vocal cords. And then tamas is the body itself. Because I need you can't just have the vocal cords talking. So the speaking is rajas, the body is tamas. The sattva is coming from this thing. They are interacting and the lecture is going on. What have I got to do with them? So there is absolutely no identification with the body, mind and intellect. So this is what Bhagavan is saying here. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste. So in the mind, he has renounced the action as well as the results. And happily he stays. How do we stay? Completely stressed. We have constant stress. When will the next, what will I do tomorrow? What will I cook tomorrow? I have to go shopping tomorrow. I've got to do this tomorrow, that tomorrow. Happily, this person stays. This joy of renunciation is the wealth. Vairagya, you know, when you get vairagya, this renunciation. That's why in Bhajakovindam also there he says, you know, what joy is there that a viragi doesn't enjoy? Viragi, one who has got vairagya, one who has got dispassion, is the happiest person. If it is there, happy. If it is not there, also happy. If it is not there, we are unhappy. That is the problem. We are happy when we have. But when it's not there, we become unhappy. If we can maintain that happiness, whether it is there or not there, that is dispassion. Okay? So this is what Bhagavan is saying here. Now, next. Nakartrutvam nakarmani lokasya srujati prabhuhu nakarma phala sanyogam svabhavastu pravartate. Neither agency nor actions does the Lord create for the world, nor union with the fruits of actions, but it is nature that acts. Svabhavastu pravartate. Svabhava here meaning prakriti. Prakriti meaning maya. Maya meaning sattva, rajas and tamas. If you remember tattva bodh, that is the description of maya. Maya is of the nature of sattva, rajas and tamas. And this is what Bhagavan says. Prabhu, God or Atma, Lord, prabhavati iti prabhu. So prabhavati, omniscient, the one who knows everything. Ever present. So Prabhu is one which can never be given. You know our nature, basic nature, that we cannot give up. Whatever we can give up is not our nature. It's not us. What we cannot give up is that self. That self we never, that is what Prabhu is. So that the self, the pure self, the pure consciousness, which can never be given up. Anything acquired, we can give up. So that's why the body is acquired, mind is acquired. And that's why it can be given up. But the existence principle is not an acquired thing. The Sat-Chit Ananda that we talk about is not acquired. And that can never be given up. You can end the body, but you cannot end your own existence. You may not exist as this particular body, but you will remain as existence forever and ever. Okay, and that is one meaning of Prabhu as well. Ego is, we have gathered it. We have acquired it. We have acquired the ego. By how we acquire ego? By thinking that I am the one that went to school and I am the one that got this degree. Now I am the one that knows this much. All this is acquired and therefore it can be given up. Anything acquired can be given up. Now here what is being said is, Na karmani, the Lord, the pure consciousness, he does not do anything. And if we go to like a bit into technical matters, see the pure consciousness, which is beyond everything, is the non-doer, always remains as the non-doer. but we see the world, so we know we have not created it, so somebody must have created it. Then how it is to be explained? Then the concept of Maya and Ishvara comes into being. So Ishvara, Maya is the inherent power of the Lord. And then when this Maya power is invoked, then this Prabhu is known as Ishvara. And then as Ishvara, the creation comes into being. Okay. So therefore, when we want something, suppose if we need something and we are in sorrow, affliction, better to go to God than anybody else. But when we say go to God, we can never go to the pure consciousness, because pure consciousness has got nothing to do with this creation. So whom we go to is Ishvara. And then from Ishvara Hiranyagarbha, which is the total mind, this is all technical. Huh? This, all these avatars and all that are happening from Hiranyagarbha, this Virat Purusha, and then it has got this Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. So these avatars, Rama, Krishna, and all the avatars of Vishnu. So we go to them or we go to Ishvara, because they can do something, because Ishvara has got the power of Maya, but the pure consciousness doesn't have. So when we pray, it is only up to Ishvara level we can pray, and Ishvara is capable of giving us everything as per our own karmas. Please remember. That's why people say, you know, I prayed so much and I didn't get it. But also, the Lord is also bound by his own rules. So the way the results are given is, he will look into what we have done in the past. Then as per that, that result comes. It's like I write a paper in the exam. The examiner is going to give me marks as per what I have written in that paper. Not saying, oh, she's my favorite student, let me just give 100 out of 100. No, he's bound by the rules. In India, that can also happen. Forget that. But as a general rule, whatever is in that paper will be looked at, and then the marks will be assigned. So same way, when Ishvara dishes out results, karma phala, he looks at the karmas that have been done in the past by that individual. Okay, this is how it is given out. Anyway, therefore he says pure consciousness, it doesn't do anything, and it really doesn't. It is the non-doer. That part of the non-doer description, it cannot be compromised at any time. And therefore we should never go to the pure consciousness and say that, please give me this thing. Because pure consciousness will say, who are you? It's like going to the rope and saying, please remove this snake. He'll say, what snake? Rope will say, what snake? Where is the snake? What snake are you talking about? There's nothing. You cannot go do that. So na karmani, there is no actions that are done by the Lord, including creating the world of creating this world of objects. And na kartrutvam does not create the doership either. There is nothing on his part. Neither karma phala sanyoga, karma phala, results of action, neither does he create the desire. So this triad, what is the triad? The doer, the doing, and the done, the result, right? This is the knower, known, and knowing. This triad, triputi, is not created by the Lord. Nas lokasya srijati prabhu, na kartrutvam, na karmani, lokasya srijati. Srijan is to spring forth, as the actual word of this, meaning of this word. Srij is the dhatu, and srijati, coming forth, so being born or creating, okay, in this thing. And na karma phala sayoga svabhavastu pravartate. So pravartate, but yet we see all this. In this world, we see this thing happening. Now we have our own desires, etc. So what he's saying is they are being done by prakriti. So maya. Okay, that's why. The power of this maya, it is our own nature. And it is of the three gunas. It is triguna atmak, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And these gunas acting within themselves, interacting amongst themselves, create this notion of I am the doer, create the notion that I am doing something. This is like when I think now I am speaking. I think that all of you are listening. This is being done by prakriti. The substratum is not doing this. But this prakriti cannot act without the power of the substratum. Sant Gnaneshwar calls this as husband and wife. He says that the husband doesn't do anything. Okay. The wife has to do everything. Maya, this Prakriti is the wife. Wife has to do everything. Problem is the wife cannot do anything on her own. She needs the husband's permission. But the husband is not doing anything. At the same time, husband is not. So the substratum is not doing anything. But this power can only function, this Maya, this Prakriti, these gunas can only function in the presence of the substratum. In Atmabodh, the example is given, like the people working that time, you know, in those days, they never had any electricity, lights and all. So they said they could only act after sunrise up to sundown, up to sunset, only in that window. So they depended on the sunlight for working. This is the example Bhagavan Shankaracharya has given in Atmabodh. Same way, these gunas, they depend on the pure consciousness for acting. But the actions are being happening because of their interaction within amongst themselves. The pure consciousness actually is not doing anything. Okay? So, Sant Gnaneshwar's example is husband and wife. This is the same thing. That's why we say pure consciousness, pure self, complete non-doership. There's nothing in pure. If you reach that stage, everything is, there's nothing. There's nothing as world. So what is there to act and who is acting and what is the result? Nothing is there. But when that Maya power is invoked, it is illusory, but it is there. And then Ishvara brings about all this. This whole creation is coming up from there. And so this Prakriti Swabhava, it is in Dhridresh Vivek, I don't know whether that's the next text, but this example will come in there. There is a black round iron ball, cold black iron ball is there. Okay, it's cold and it's black. Okay, fine. It's got nothing. Yeah, okay, just a round iron ball. Now, it comes in the proximity of fire. Okay, so then because of the proximity of fire, it becomes hot, it becomes red, and then it gets this capability of burning. Then if I touch it, I get burnt. So that capacity to burn comes to it because of the proximity of fire. Now, what that iron ball thinks, he forgets that this capacity to burn is because of the proximity of fire. It says, I am capable of burning. This is what we are doing. As an ignorant person, this is what I'm doing. I am the one that is acting, forgetting that without the proximity to that pure self, I cannot even lift a finger. Therefore, Kenopanishad says, even a blade of grass cannot move without the will of the Lord. That part we forget. And I comes and I am acting, I am doing this, I am doing that. So this is what Bhagavan is trying to tell here, that please understand, this ball then is this Prakriti, that is, it is actually cold and round, it cannot burn, it has no burning power, it has no nothing, it has no glow, it has no heat, it has no burning power. But because it comes in touch with this fire, so because these gunas, because this Maya comes in touch with this pure consciousness, now suddenly it has become enlivened. Now I can move my hands, I can talk, I can jump, I can run, I can do this, I can speak, I can do so many things. And I forget that it is because of the proximity to the pure consciousness. It is because of this association with pure consciousness. And I say, I can do everything. I can't. The body cannot. And I, as the supreme consciousness, do nothing. Body cannot do anything. Now suddenly, who is the one that is thinking? Ego. Another example is there in Dhridresh Vivek. There is a person who is an actor, a stage actor. He's an ordinary husband, father, ordinary human being. And in the green room, there is a costume of a king, which is inert. It is just sitting there and nothing. Now this human being goes into that green room. Ordinary father, ordinary man goes in, he wears the clothes of a king. All of a sudden he starts thinking, I am the king. Neither the costume is the king, nor is the person the king. Okay? neither is the pure consciousness doing anything, and this Kaushu, which is the body, mind and intellect, that is the, this is the Kaushu, is incapable of being. Kaushu by itself, can it become king? No. The man by itself, is he becoming the king? Is he doing? No. But somehow when they come together, suddenly this monster is created. I am the king. This is what we are doing. This is what the ignorant person is doing. This is what Bhagwan is saying here. That pure consciousness is not doing it. The fire is not, it's fire by itself. It is there. Now this iron ball comes in. Suddenly now the iron ball thinks, I am the one that is burning everybody. This body, mind and intellect, because of the proximity of consciousness, can act, can speak, can see, taste, touch, hear, etc., etc. And all of a sudden, I forget that proximity and I say, and this is no. Recognition of that substratum is liberation. That is what liberation is. Okay? I'm going to stop here today. We will start with 15 next. Are there any questions? No questions? Okay. All right. So we will meet next Monday. Thank you all for attending. If there are any questions, let me know. But everybody seems to be very silent. So everybody could hear me, no? Otherwise, I think that all of you should leave your video on, then I can see you guys. I think video should not affect the audio, right, Ashok? Am I correct? I can understand that if your audio are left on, then maybe my voice might this thing. I know Shankarji, you're speaking, but I can't hear you. Your audio is off. Ashok, am I right? Are you there? Ashok has slept.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, we can leave it on, Jayaji. Yes.
Video can be on, no? That's what I feel. Yeah. That's what I feel. You know, in the Panchadashi webinar that I'm doing, Swamiji always says, I want to see everybody because then I can see if they've understood or not. Yeah, so I'm also feeling like that. I'm feeling like I'm talking to a blank. See, I can only see Abhimanyu, which is nice. But I think that the video should not affect my voice. Am I right?
Zoom is capable of taking that. I don't think your voice is getting affected. So it's okay, yeah.
That was when we were using Skype.
Skype, yeah, we used to have. And then also I think the speed and all that. But I think now it's okay. But I think you had a question. Please go ahead.
I was wondering, you said when it comes to Bhakti Yoga, it's a different way of looking at the same thing. Mm-hmm. Can you please elaborate on that? Or?
Different means, when we talk Jnana, in Jnana we don't say Krishna and Rama and all. Jnana means highest knowledge, means knowledge of the self, the substratum. Mm-hmm. This portion of the Bhagavad Gita that is going on, this is Jnana is going on. Mm-hmm. As we go after seventh chapter, it will go into bhakti. What happens in bhakti is in the initial stages, and actually the devotee, you know, till the very end, he maintains duality. He doesn't say self, myself and yourself. He doesn't say like that. There is a complete surrender of ego. So he says, you know, it's easier to do bhakti. It's easy. Mm-hmm. So he says, my Krishna is there and, you know, my Krishna will do this for me. Please do this for me. Please do that for me. That is okay. But the highest devotee, when we read chapter 12, you'll notice that this Bhakta Lakshana and then Stita Prajna, which is Jnana, same Lakshanas are the same. Mm. Characteristics of a Bhakta are the same. The true Bhakta is always a Jnani. And a true Jnani is always a Bhakta. There is no difference between the two in the higher stages. Mm-hmm. In the initial stages, it feels, because the Jnani says, who Krishna, who Rama? There's only substratum, only the pure self. I only recognize the non-doer and this. And the Bhakta says, no, my Krishna is there. My Daivi is there. And my this one is there. Shiva is there. That one is there. But in the culmination of bhakti, there is jnana. In the culmination of jnana, there is bhakti. There has to be. Otherwise, it will give ego. Jnana gives, that's why jnana gives it more chance of ego in jnana. Mm-hmm. Less chance of ego in bhakti, because in bhakti, there is always surrender. and it is surrender of the ego. And therefore, Narad Bhakti Sutra, in there, Narad Bhagwan says, bhakti is the highest. Yeah. It's like that. If you read Bhagwan Shankaracharya, you'll say Jnana is the highest. If you read Narad Bhakti Shastri, you'll say bhakti is the highest. Point is, what are you qualified for? Same thing like here. What are you? Are you heart-oriented? Are you emotional? Are you sentimental? Is it easy for you to have somebody to talk? It's really easy to have. Like if you say pure self, like, you know, this not can't talk to the pure self, because pure self is not even recognizing that you're there. There's no duality. Suddenly you say this, it becomes very difficult. But when you say bhakti, you know, there's my Krishna, I can talk to him, I can ask him, I can fight with him, I can, so it's
you kind of relate to it.
You relate to it.
Yeah, like Mirabai, you know, Mira, you did bhakti, and then of course.
But in the ultimate analysis, there is absolutely no difference. And hopefully one day we will reach chapter 12. Then you'll know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, everybody fine? All right. We'll close. We'll meet next Monday.